America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And this is episode 312 of the Colombia Calling podcast. And later on in this show, segment three, we'll be talking to Jeff Brown, and he's in Valparaíso, Chile. But the great thing is that we get to reflect a little bit on his travels in Colombia as a location-independent professional. You'll remember, Jeff, from episode 284 in July 2019, when we had the podcast episode entitled Colombia Calling All Travelers. Now, he'll be reflecting on the 2 and a bit months that he spent in Colombia, and I think we'll get a deeper appreciation of what a traveler encounters and how they feel after spending, you know, a reasonably significant period of time in the country. So very, very interesting show in the pipeline for you. I know that a lot of you enjoyed last week's show with Mi Colombia, who again prefers to remain unnamed, but maybe a little bit depressing when we think through all of the gaffes and colossal mistakes and errors that this government has been making in the last couple of years. And we've still got a couple of years left. So if you want to refresh yourself on what went on last week, of course, listen to episode 311 with Mi Colombia, but also check out my blog. That's richardmccall.com. And I did a recent post about it as a week in the life of President Iván Duque, part one. I fear that part two will be very forthcoming, the way that this government is behaving. But anyway, without further ado, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsimer with Columbia Reports for the news update this week. And then we'll be back in segment three with Jeff Brown. And before I go, thank you again to all my listeners. And thank you again to all of those who have pledged to sponsor for as little as $2 a month on the Patreon website. You can find it on our Facebook page and we post it on Twitter. But the Patreon website to help improve and grow the Columbia Calling podcast. Thank you again, all of you out there. Stay tuned and listen to the rest of the show. I'm Richard McCall, and thank you.
My name is Alan Alsima, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for February 18, 2020. Colombia's ELN rebels embarked on a 3-day terror campaign in an attempt to shut down the country. The guerrilla show of force left at least one soldier dead and 5 policemen and 1 civilian injured. Hundreds of thousands of residents in guerrilla-controlled territory were confined to their homes during the so-called armed strike. The armed strike was the fiercest in years and overwhelmed security forces who in multiple cases also obeyed the guerrillas and took shelter in police stations and army compounds. While significant parts of the country were being terrorized, President Iván Duque went on a spiritual retreat to the presidential holiday home. According to the president's website, the retreat with members of his cabinet was meant to evaluate the achievements of the first 18 months of management and review the national government's targets for 2020. Defense Minister Carlos Holmes Trujillo took charge of the authorities' response to the guerrilla onslaught while the president was away. The prosecution raided the main office of Colombia's largest airliner, Avianca, revealing the second bribery scandal in less than 2 weeks. The raid was the result of an internal investigation in which the company found that foreign officials had received favors. The alleged bribery practices took place in 2017, before controversial businessman German Efromovich was expelled from the board of directors. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro reiterated his call on his Colombian counterpart Iván Duque to re-establish diplomatic relations, I quote, before it's too late. Maduro repeated unfounded claims that Duque was training, I quote, terrorist groups to invade Venezuela and warned for repercussions. According to the Venezuelan president, the alleged military threat from Colombia is linked to, I quote, economic warfare of the United States. The War Crimes Tribunal is considering the expulsion of Colombia's former army commander after victims called his trial a waste of time. Retired General Mario Montoya is accused of some of the armed conflict's worst war crimes and is tried because of the execution of thousands of civilians under his watch. According to the victims, Montoya blamed these mass killings on the lower class soldiers who were so ignorant they, I quote, didn't even know how to use silverware or use the bathroom. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is segment 3 of episode 312 of the Colombia Calling podcast. And as I said earlier in the podcast, we will be having Jeff Brown on the show. Jeff is a location independent professional. He was on in July 2019, episode 284, when we'd had the titled Colombia Calling All Travelers. And so we're having another travel-related show today, but I like this because we get to go a bit deeper into the reason why people travel and someone who's been recently in the country. And I believe Jeff is on the line from Valparaíso, Chile.
Yes, hi, Richard. It's an honor to be back again.
No, it's a real pleasure to have you on. And well, you've done some serious traveling since we last spoke, since July last year, but you spent a good 2 months in Colombia, right? And you traveled all around.
Yeah, we saw almost the entire country. We have a few things left on the table that are probably going to draw us back before we're done in South America. Like we didn't see the Pacific coast. We didn't get down to Popayan or Pasto, which I really wanted to. And, you know, Mampos, you got a place up there. I don't want to leave it off the map either.
Well, of course. I mean, you'd be doing yourself a massive disservice to not. But there's so much in Colombia. There's so much to do. And in two short months, you got, you know, obviously a greater slice than most people do. If we think of North Americans or Europeans on their office holidays, perhaps they only get 12 days or 18 days a year. It's just too much.
And they spend it all in three places. You know, they go to Cartagena, Medellin, and Bogota. And they feel done.
Well, you know, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard. I mean, you're in this privileged but also challenging lifestyle, you know, being location independent and so on. But tell us a little bit about the route that you traveled around Colombia so that my listeners can get an idea of your the map.
Yeah. Well, we started off in Cartagena and spent about a week there, which might have been about twice as much as we needed. I was surprised to see that place was still growing, even after decades of being a popular tourist place. It was still growing. It seems like some of the areas are becoming a little gentrified. We did some volunteer work with a guy named Alex Rocha. He's got a great foundation, R-O-C-H-E. And he was showing us around a bit and showing us how these places that weren't developed were now getting condos, and that the local government, once that happened, they kind of stepped in and started helping the infrastructure. But some of the areas just didn't have much of a good infrastructure.
So how did you end up getting in touch with this guy? Sorry, I mean,
he's on Facebook. Okay. He works with the children there. Underprivileged children, underserved children, and we did some photography classes with him and practiced some English, but he plays soccer with them and does all kinds of activities. It's really impressive. And he's got his own thing going on up there too. He comes from one of those communities that were the original free slaved communities.
Wow.
And he's got a lot of stuff to share. He might be an interesting guest sometime. He speaks good English too.
Well, I do like your recommendations. I do, but I jump in again because for my listeners out there, that Jeff is the guy who put me in touch with Gabriel Torres, who was the first episode this year when we talked about the Caminos Reales here in Colombia in Barichara.
Amazing!
How did you get in touch with him?
That's where we ended our trip. Well, we were on the bus headed to Barichara from San Gil, and he was chatting us up, showing us what he had to offer. And we didn't have enough time there to take advantage of everything he had to offer. But wow, those ancient trails that go through the area. He's got a lot of them mapped out, and he's got some really interesting routes that you can take that you get to see things that you just wouldn't see otherwise. Hiking to some of the smallest villages in Colombia and remote places that you can only get to by foot. He's got a plethora of things that can be done that are nowhere near any tourists. It's impressive. He was showing us pictures of, I forget the name of it, but the type of land where the water is collected and it becomes part of the aquifer, which then feeds all of Colombia's river systems.
Oh, yeah, the Páramos.
The Páramos, yeah. He had some routes that went through portions of that where you could see the plant life and really get to know what it was without harming it. It was really cool.
Fantastic. You had no chance. And now I've been in touch with him since, and he's had a whole slew of people getting in touch with him through Instagram.
Good.
And indeed,
they don't leave disappointed.
I think he's mapped out now a 6-day, 7-day hike that he's trying to get people on, which is just huge for me. It's cool.
Yeah, quite impressive. After Cartagena, that was where we ended our trip in Barichara. But after Cartagena, we went to Santa Marta because on the internet, it just goes on and on about what a beautiful place it is. It's touted as a beach town, but it really isn't. It's kind of a gateway to beach towns. But Santa Marta itself is just overgrown town, which may have gone through some positive changes. But now at this point, it's just growing too quickly for its infrastructure. The locals are a little dismayed at how quickly it's growing and some of the problems that it's developing.
Yeah,
it's still popular, though.
Well, I can understand. It's kind of, the Colombian access to the beach and the improvement of the downtown area, albeit more than 10 years ago, the sort of renovation and I guess regeneration of the downtown area has been massive. When I was first there in the late 1990s, you just couldn't walk downtown. I mean, it was that dangerous. Now, obviously it's the hub and the life of the city. But what I was feeling and seeing myself is, and I haven't been in a couple of years, it's been about 2 years now, but my worry is, especially right now, with the dollar being so expensive and the peso being so weak, the Colombians have to focus on domestic tourism, and so it's only going to continue, as you say, just this aimed at domestic tourism at that certain level, it's all about growth rather than sustainability.
I'm a little nervous for the area because they're really trying to cash in while they can in some of those areas like Palomino, and if something's not done soon, they might end up ruining some of the areas. I've heard horror stories about maybe the sewage system not being up to par for the amount of tourism they're getting, and it just not quite being ready for what it's handling as far as flow.
It's kind of the problem, isn't it? It's that double-edged sword. The government wants tourism, doesn't know how to manage it. People need tourism, but again, doesn't know how to manage it. And it is all about the glossy magazines and the great publicity overseas. It's very tough, this one, because Colombia, I don't know, you know, the principal industries here are extractive, but we need to move away from that. And there's so much available here, but at the same time,
there's a lot of opportunity in Colombia. Yeah. I mean, the ecotourism around the world is now a serious niche. People are looking for that. They want to still take their vacation, but they want to know that they're not impinging on the environment. And Colombia's got all kinds of opportunities for that, I think.
Tell us about your trip then. Sorry, I've interrupted you too many
times. Yeah, it's fine. That's okay. So then after Santa Marta, we came down to Antioquia, and we went over to Guatapé, which, you know, I think a lot of the Colombian towns that are starting to experience a lot of tourism, they could look there and maybe get some insights, because that place has got it together. They have a really good plan for tourism, and it was just such a cute town. And it's got the big rock, El Panal, but that almost paled in comparison to the town itself. Such a strong sense of community, and everything seemed organized. They had a group of people working for the municipality in the government building that handled all the veterinary concerns. That everybody knew all the street dogs. They were all spayed and neutered, all just fat and happy. They were all fed and watered. It was just a great feeling town. And so close to Medellin, which is where we went next. And we wanted to like Medellin a lot. We really enjoyed the metro system. It's incredible. The Comunitrace, the Barrio 13, was really something to get to know. Not only the history of the area, which was kind of like a little slice of Colombian history in and of itself, but then to see where it is now and all the strides they've made to I don't want to say compensate, because they'll never be able to compensate that barrio, but yeah. the steps they've taken to kind of improve the living situation, and then the graffiti there is just incredible. Other than that, and the water museum, which was really interesting, it was hard for us to handle the amount of pollution. They're circled by mountains, and so they got a lot of inversion, and we do not dig pollution. So that was hard on us. So we skated out of there and got down to Jardín. That was nicer.
Yeah. And so you spent a lot of time in the coffee zone then. I mean, you're more you like getting out into the rural areas.
We know we like the more rural areas. You get a little bit more authentic view of the people. Big city people are kind of the same the world around. They don't share the sidewalk. They're busy getting where they're going, and maybe they've got plenty of tourists to say hi to, so they don't. Where you get to the smaller towns and you start to meet these lovely people who, for us, did everything but us invite us into their house. I mean, it was just so friendly. And my wife really liked Jardín. She had a couple of nice hikes there. We really felt safe there. You know, I mean, the whole country felt really safe, but once we got to Jardín, it was just obvious there's nothing going on here that's dangerous. And that was, that reminds me to mention that when we came to Colombia, we had these myths in our mind. You know, Colombia is dangerous. There's a lot of mosquitoes, and we just really didn't face any of that. We don't go out at night. Like we don't go out and party hard, and we're fairly savvy travelers. So we didn't face any issues at all in any of the towns we were in, and we were everywhere. And then mosquitoes, you know, I brought 3 bottles of mosquito spray thinking I was going to be fighting them, but we didn't have any mosquitoes. So we're quite surprised by that.
That's great. It's so positive. Yeah. This is all so positive. And
it was a great experience. I can see why my friends like it. You know, I got a couple friends who've traveled quite a bit, and I understand why they like Colombia. It's just now starting to have kind of a touristy feel in some places. But for the most part, if you like to go places and kind of feel like a regular person, or maybe even get treated a little special because you're not just one of many, Colombia's got it going on.
So Did you, I mean, how would you suggest to, like, in the next wave of travelers coming here? I mean, clearly you really loved the coffee zone. How would you suggest to them that they explore or get the best out of the coffee region?
We really did like the coffee region. It was just so open and pleasant and scenic. And even the bigger towns like Armenia and Parida, Manizales, they still had a smaller town feel than one would expect, because they're big cities in and of themselves. We put our home base in Parida, and then from there we would take like an hour bus ride to the towns around there to get to know them. I might choose Armenia instead, now that I know that area, because it was just a little closer to the areas we were going to. We went to Finlandia, which we really liked. It's kind of like a burgeoning Salento. Salento's had tourism for 15, 20 years, and it's got all the infrastructure and bells and whistles of a tourist trap, but Finlandia doesn't quite have that, and it's very pretty and scenic, but just not quite as polished as Salento, which was awesome. I mean, we had a great hike. I saw a condor there. It was incredible. But it was more expensive, and it's a little bit polished, and it was just chock-a-block full of people.
It's really full, isn't it? It's really full. I don't even want to think of how many sort of guest houses, hostels, hotels there must be there now. I haven't been in a few years now, but the last time I went, I was there on a Sunday, and we couldn't walk down the main street for people. And it's, I say, like, you know, and I was with the owner of a very chic travel agency, giving him his tour around Colombia, and he just went, I can't bring people here. I like it, but I can't if it's this kind of thing. So that's tough, you know, when you want sort of numbers,
there's
or
other
quality
options.
Yeah, and that's what you say.
Landia makes a good option, and then there's even smaller towns. I was tempted not to even mention them, because people get to know them, and then we really liked Pijao. That place was just tiny, and it was the friendliest. It just incredibly friendly. We asked the guy for directions. He's running his little sweet stand on the corner, and he shut down his stand and took us there, walked us over there a couple blocks, three blocks, because he wanted to chat with us and make sure we got where we were going. And I mean, I was just dumbstruck by how nice he was. And there was a really good coffee shop there that they call it the Sena, which is some type of government group, was helping them develop their business, which was all coffee. They had a guest house. They had a coffee plantation. They had this coffee shop in town, and you could go through the whole coffee process with them. They'd sit down for a tasting, and they had all these unique things that you just can't get on the market. Like one that was, the coffee bean was dried inside the fruit, and it takes like a year for it to dry, special process. And the flavors, it's just amazing fruity flavors from that type of coffee. But you can't buy it anywhere but really close to there, because there's just no market for it. Then there was little towns around there, Buena Vista, Cordoba might be a good place to hang out for a few days and take day trips over to those other places. But really nice.
Yeah, I was invited to Buena Vista last year, and I didn't get there because we had our flight out to Manizales, and then of course it was inclement weather. And as I say about the Manizales airport, is really just decorative, because it was a literary fair. They have some sort of literary festival in Buena Vista, and I was really looking forward to it, because I had been invited to give a reading and everything, and it was going to be fun, you know. It was, and then everything fell at the last. I mean, there we were as a family sitting in the Avianca terminal waiting to leave when it was then canceled. So it didn't happen.
Well, I think that seems like a really special area too, because they, unlike Salento, which never had gorillas, never had natural calamities, Pijao and Buena Vista have had it all, and it's really set them back as far as developing. And so they're still very small towns, even though they're on the precipice of gorgeousness. I mean, it's just beautiful there, and they're high above it all. That is a great place. Yeah, that's where I would probably go. But after the coffee region, we went down to Cali. And of the four big cities, Cartagena, Medellin, Bogota, and Cali, we thought Cali was very unique into itself. It has such a different vibe than the rest of the country. I imagine that has something to do with it being kind of the unofficial capital of the South. But it seemed calmer and more laid back. It seemed to be more culturally diverse, if that's possible. I mean, all of Colombia, it seems very diverse. But Cali had something special going on.
Yeah, there's an ambience there that's different. And I love it. And I haven't been in a long time. And I keep saying this, but, you know, you get a family and everything else and responsibilities, you just can't do it. But there is something. It's the first city I ever knew in Colombia, and I love it. And of course, and that element of the culture of the Pacific Coast, which obviously permeates everything. And then, of course, you know, we have to mention it, the salsa.
Yeah.
And the climate helps. Of course it does.
You know, sure.
I like that city. And anyone I know down there, absolutely, you know, they will swear by it. You know, God forbid you suggest anywhere is better. You know, between Bogota and Medellin, we can argue and argue and argue and blah, blah, blah. But Cali, it stands apart, I think.
Yeah, very unique atmosphere.
And did you dance?
We probably didn't fully experience Cali. I know we can't say we fully experienced it because I work early in the morning, and we tend to try to get back to our place where we're staying kind of early. So we were never out at night. We never went and enjoyed the salsa music and the dancing. And I imagine that town doesn't even start to light up until after dark. That's probably when it really shows its true colors.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's the truth. So I, as you said, out of the cities, Cali was your favorite. And I probably think that, I don't know, Medellin, Cartagena for you would come into sort of a third equal place. And Bogota, Bogota, you liked better
than
liked others.
We liked Bogota, yeah.
It's unusual.
I mentioned that to you earlier. The it had a lot of the culture that we were looking for, the distinct colonial culture, and we really liked Museo Botero. That was an incredible surprise. I mean, not to mention that it's free, but it's like four or five museums in one with all these Picassos and Pissarros and huge exhibits of Botero. It's just so impressive.
It's a beautiful museum. And of course, it could have ended up in Medellin. It could have ended up in Medellin because that's where Botero wanted to go, to his home city. And Medellin, they dilly-dallied, let's say, on where they were going to put it. And he got tired of waiting and said, right, well, here goes. I'm giving it to Bogota. So it was Bogota's huge game.
Lucky for Bogota, yeah. It is.
Were you here a few days in Bogota or...?
Yeah, we stayed about a week in total. We went there from Cali and organized ourselves and spent a couple of days. And then we went up north to Tunja and San Gil, saw Villarrieva and Barichara, which I think for Colombians, that is maybe one of the most important pilgrimages they can take because they got all the history of the origins of Colombia as a country, it seems. And we really liked it up there. I think there's more to see, but, you know, Villarrieva having all the original, not warriors, but the people who fought for independence.
Yeah.
Fathers.
The founding fathers, the independence movement, the museums. It's a special city, a town. But of course, it has changed, hasn't it? Because of its relative proximity to Bogota.
I was so surprised. We went up there thinking, you know, we stayed in Tunja and then we went to Villarrieva for day trips. And we're like running into people who are just up there for the day. From Bogota, it's like that easy to get up there. I'm so surprised.
Well, I mean, last time we spoke, you were in Idaho, and now you're in Valparaiso, and the U.S. and Colombia have some things in common where you think 3 hours is not a you know, it's not a long journey. In England, you've covered it. But so say 3.5 hours, people go out for the day to Via de Leyva. And I was just like, I don't want to do a 6-hour round trip to go, but they do it. And it has changed in that respect because of being like a holiday town for Bogotanos, but it's still beautiful and it's still sophisticated with its restaurants and it's got its history and its museums and the hiking nearby. Is it the Iguaque Park, which is right there on the edge of of the town? Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's got everything. I mean, we can't talk ill of it. It's right there. And if you're on a short trip to Bogota or Colombia and just in Bogota, you could make a nice day and night trip out there. You know, it's worthwhile.
I agree.
You
talk about things changing. I think it's important to note that people who think they know Colombia but haven't been there for 3 to 5 years, they might be shocked when they come back because the place is just growing exponentially, especially the smaller towns. If they've got any bit of popularity to them, they're growing so fast.
It's true, isn't it? And things are changing so quickly. Now, I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to mm-hmm. something. I mean, we touched on it at the beginning, sort of. Let's say when we talked about Santa Marta, and you talked about Palomino, and of course tourism, the trickle down, and so on. But it's, you know, we have to see the positive side, but we also have to see there's a negative side to it, this negative tourism growth. Have you seen that elsewhere in Colombia? Like we say, it's just gone over the top, you know, that perhaps the infrastructure is so far behind maybe the crowds of people already arriving, like in Palomino.
It's not overwhelming yet, but it's definitely, it seems like, there, if it went on at this pace, it might get overwhelmed. The infrastructure might get overwhelmed. But at the same time, I see the government trying to stay ahead of it. For example, Parida, they're building cable cars, and that's going to make a big difference in the amount of traffic on the roads, which is at this point getting unbearable for the locals. They're the ones that really noticed the change. For me, it was just a busy city. But they got buses belching out black smoke and really wreaking havoc. And I think that they'll be happy to have an option that kind of lessens some of that traffic.
Yeah, I mean, this is all that, this sort of, let's say, the albatross around the neck of the developing world, isn't it? It's how to get past this sort of industrializing, post-industrializing economy, because the low-grade fuel in the transport system, which, of course, is essential, the transport system for, you know, Stratos 1, 2, and 3 and beyond, and it's just how to balance it out. And everything needs to be treated with a balance, but it's how to balance it out. And I mean, I'm Pereira, I think, is a good example, because it's got that great, it's that, you know, I would say that perfect population to be able to sort of observe and investigate when you're doing this type of tourism, I think, and this type of growth.
Yeah, I think that Colombia they're in a great position, unfortunately, because of their history, where they weren't able to develop for a long time, and their growth was stunted by the things that were going on internally. And now that they're getting on the other side of that, they are on the other side of it, but they still have a reputation. As that reputation fades and people realize, I think Colombia could learn a lot from other countries that have gone through tourism growth already and not make the same mistakes and have a more intentional, planned economic or tourist section. It seems to me that like I said earlier, it's a prime place for eco-friendly tourism. And in addition to that, I could see them having some high-end relaxation tourism as well and doing it quite well.
I think you're right on that one. We need to study overseas, study other markets and other examples and do that. I've got a couple of last sort of points here.
Sure.
But if you were to sort of, well, first of all, you represent in my mind, you know, a sector, a very important sector of the U.S. market. And the U.S. market is, for Colombia, given its location in the world. The U.S. market is absolutely must be a primary market if we're talking tourism.
Oh, it was
tourism.
A cheap flight getting down there.
How would we promote Colombia better to get more Americans down here beyond Cartagena, Bogota, and Medellin?
Yeah. Outside of word of mouth, people who have come down here and are able to express to the U.S. market that it isn't what they think it is. I mean, if I was to develop an advertisement campaign, it would be something like, you know, Colombia, it's not what you think it is, or something, or it's growing rapidly. I think that a lot of people who come down here now, they want somewhere where their dollar goes far and where they're able to have a place where they can settle into a beautiful place that's got lots of fruit and where they can have adventures. And that is definitely here.
It's true. I mean, there's a bit of everything, but you just got to get past this stigma. And it just takes a long time as well. It takes a long time. But of course, your dollar's going to go a long way right now. And one other last thing is that, you know, you've traveled around Colombia, a good amount. Do you feel that in terms of, you know, you yourself as a tourist, that Colombia's marketing campaign and the way they're trying to sell the country is looking far too much at sort of the Western world or Northern European world, and they could be looking more internally, perhaps at the uniqueness of what Colombia possesses?
Colombia is so rich of a country with all kinds of different resources and environments to explore that I think it's hard for them to get that across. I mean, people might think they're exaggerating, but so I don't think they could ever oversell themselves. They have so much to offer. It's incredible. If I was looking for a place to live outside of the U.S., I would not pass up investigating Colombia, because there's so many places that you could buy a piece of property and then just watch as the value went up and up and up and up, because the place is growing so much. There's so many opportunities.
There's opportunities. There are, of course, hindrances, as in everywhere. But you do your investigation and you do your research and you take a look around and you spend some time on the ground. I mean, you don't jump into these things blindly.
You got to be aware that you buy your house here, and with zoning, you might end up with a muffler shop next door. You just never know.
What zoning are we talking about? But that's the truth, absolutely. Or even worse, the Vallenato bar, which is my problem. So but I talk about it too often. But no, I think it's fascinating. And I think, you know, you represent, and this is why I liked very much our last interview in 284 back in July, is that, you know, you were talking about the hopes of what you wanted to do and what you hoped to find. And now we're checking back in with you, and it's, you know, several months later, and you're out of Colombia. And you've had time to reflect. And these are, you know, these are cerebral answers and a cerebral conversation that we're having. We're not just talking about the superficial nature of tourism. We've gone beyond that to talk about you as a U.S. citizen, what you look for.
Yeah, I would recommend people don't come with any fear, because the place really isn't dangerous. I was just really taken aback by how safe we felt the whole time. My wife didn't think she would be able to jog in the mornings because of, you know, the danger, but she did. She every day she's out there jogging with no issues, never had any problems.
Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, you stick. You went off, let's say, off the main track in some areas to get out to some little known places, but you're still in a segment of the country that is remarkably secure. If you take unnecessary risks like a journalist or someone else, it's a different story, but you're coming here with a different thing in mind. And, well, I think it's fantastic. I mean, you're down there in Chile now. Probably, I hope you're yearning for Colombia once again.
I haven't stopped yearning for Colombia since we left because I'm frugal and man, Colombia was cheap. As soon as we left, I was spending double on everything.
Well, Chile is expensive.
The place is so cheap.
But I think that's really great, and I think this is the kind of podcast that I enjoy doing greatly because it's something very positive. It's something to hopefully hit the, you know, my listeners in the US a little bit. You know, maybe just push them and nudge them forwards if they're still a bit apprehensive.
And if people are reluctant, there's all kinds of expat groups on Facebook, which if you can handle a mild ribbing, they're there to answer questions. And Medine Guru, they had a lot of interesting information. And you know, when you do come, remember, you don't just launch into conversations with people. You have a little bit of small talk, and that little bit of small talk really goes a long way towards these people opening up. You just say hello, how are you, nice day today, then ask your question, and it makes a world of difference.
It's really interesting that's a really nice way of ending it. It's kind of old worldly in that way. I think it's harks back to a time past where, you know, everybody knew everybody, and you really had to be polite and be interested in your neighbor and so on. And even when I go to press conferences, which is very unusual now because I just don't like going to them, but or to meetings, and you have, and I might not know the people, but you have to start talking in that way first, and it's great, you know. I kind of think it levels the playing field a bit.
I agree, and it feels good. I think it changes the mindset of everybody.
I do too. Jeff, thank you so much.
This has been great, Richard. Thank you.
I hope to hear that you're coming back to Colombia in the near future, and then we can have a third interview with your, you know, further, let's say, ruminations on how the country is changing for the better, or, you know, or negatively. I mean, let's say it how it is. And I wish you all the best on this sort of kind of nomadic lifestyle as a location independent professional. It's some people can do it and others can't. And so my hat is off to you for taking this plunge.
Thank you, Richard. It's been my pleasure.
You're most welcome. Those of you out there will be able to hear my 6-week-old child on the floor now, starting to wake up. So that's my call to end this interview. This has been episode 312 of the Colombia Calling podcast. We've been talking to Jeff Brown, who was on episode 284 last year previously. And thank you. We've been on a really rich vein of interviews in the last few months. And so I'm very happy with the way that the Colombia Calling podcast is going. I've been getting lots of feedback and a lot of people sharing. And please, please, please consider sponsoring us for as little as $2 a month on the Patreon website. So it would be patreon.com, Colombia Calling. For as little as $2 a month, you can help us grow and improve, because that's the whole idea. And that's my little son Francis in the background. So that is me saying goodbye today. Thank you again to Jeff Brown. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Colombia Calling. We'll be back next week with another interview. Bye bye.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.